Oh, hi there. It's MP Fitzgerald, and I'm still pretending to play the jazz piano. If you like a happy bureaucracy, you're sure to love Death Incorporated, a people of color run dark sci-fi comedy about a dystopian corporate afterlife. This shit is mandatory. Check it out.
DeHito Productions presents.
I take it you don't remember anything after boarding the plane either?
Right. We're dead.
Season 1 of Death Incorporated.
Jesse! Where the shit are you?
Zoe!
Starring Evan Schwartz and Joy Ireland.
Death is forever. That to me is so much better than any sudden change.
Unbelievable. You want to stay in this literal ghost town because of Katy Perry? Katy fucking Perry.
Featuring Dawn Reed.
Her and I actually get along really well. Best friends, you could say.
Sam, it's Colleen.
Fucking decline.
And Charles Taylor.
Voice mode activated for level A interactions. You died peacefully. How can I help you?
Death Incorporated. Narrated by Helena Reed.
Join us on all podcast platforms or at deathinc.rip.
The pretend jazz piano keeps on playing and I can't stop it. Somebody help me. But seriously, this podcast is awesome. Check them out. Nobody's paid me to say this. They're freaking awesome. You can find them anywhere that podcasts are available, or you can find them at www.deathinc.rip. All right, and now for something completely different.
A Happy Bureaucracy by MP Fitzgerald. Narrated by Gary Bennett. Author's note. Strewn between drug use, groin malice, and cursing on a level tantamount to sacrilege are gratuitous mentions of bureaucracy. These bureaucratic references may not be for the weak of heart. Chapter 10. The setting sun offered great relief to the field of cages. The rage it had been beating into the hot earth was finally subsiding, and the blood-orange smear across the dead horizon radiated a sense of peace to the slaves. It was the only beautiful thing most of them had seen in months. The rows of cages were uniform following a strict grid, yet the cages themselves were anything but. Some were the kind of cage one would expect to find holding an animal. Professionally built, made of steel bars, and definitely from before the war. Some were built from scrap, a mixture of chain-link fence welded around rusty car frames. Some were just boxes of sheet metal with penny-sized air holes drilled into them. No matter their shape, they all held living and breathing people, their numbers in the high dozens. Arthur had been put to work to earn his keep before finding himself in the remnants of a van-turned cage. He was marched from one side of the slaver city, where the slaver's well had been dug, and forced to carry 2 5-gallon buckets of water across to the cage fields, a good mile away, and dump them into a large trough. He did this over and over as the sun hammered the earth with cosmic rays. He wasn't allowed a single drop for himself. The trough of water stood dead center between the rows of cages, and to Arthur's great dismay, was not for the slaves. It was for the guards, a place where they could openly drink to diminish the hopes of the men and women they held captive. A slave was only allowed water after they earned their keep, and when customers arrived. Arthur sat down in his cage as soon as he was thrown into it. The van that the cage was built out of was cut in half, with the back portion stripped of all seats, doors, and windows, and then wrapped with a thick chain link. It was directly opposite the front half, made in the same fashion. Despite the setting sun, the cage's metal floor was still hot. but Arthur's tired and aching muscles had voted that a discomfort was worth it to endure. This was all his fault. Sure, he was just doing what he was told to do, but at the end of the day, he still chose to do it. This was going to be his life until he was sold. The frightening part? This was better than being sold. He had already heard rumors from the guards who marched him up and down Slaver City that many buyers bought slaves to dig for food. There was a sort of mad gold rush fever for canned goods that had been buried by the radioactive blasts of fusion bombs. It seemed unlikely to Arthur that anyone would find anything near the craters, and if they did, it was probably awash with radioactivity. This did not matter. If the slave found nothing, the hole was usually too deep to get out of, and they would become bait for something else looking for food. If nothing came? If nothing took to the bait, and their masters had nothing to collect from their efforts, well, they could always just eat the slave. A guard came to the trough. He was covered head to toe in sheet metal armor and was shorter than Arthur. He turned his back, stood at the trough for a stunted moment, and then left. Arthur's parched throat made his tongue feel like sandpaper. He turned away from the torturous trough. And that was when he saw him. Across from him, in the other half of the van, where a steering wheel should be, was an old man. An impossibly old man. He wore a collared white shirt, a black tie, and his badge read, "Commissioner for Operations, Jack DeWitt." Blood flushed to his slugged muscles, adrenaline poured to his heart, and Arthur shot to the edge of his cage closest to the old man. This was his boss. This was Henry Boyd's boss. The highest-ranking IRS official Arthur had ever laid eyes on, now stuck in a cage, like him. "Sir," Arthur said. "Commissioner DeWitt," he yelled, not caring if the guards had heard him. The commissioner turned his ancient head and met Arthur's eyes with his own tired gray ones.
"So," the commissioner said, "looks like we have another casualty for my trap."
Arthur blinked. Then he blinked again. When he thought of saying something, he elected to blink once more instead. "What?" was the only intelligible thing he could offer.
"What's your name, Agent?" DeWitt asked impatiently.
"Arthur McDowell, sir. Auditor number 824.
"And now you're a census taker, I suppose?"
"Yes, sir."
"Me too."
This didn't make sense.
"I've heard of you. Seen your file passed around. I'm sorry about that promotion, Mr. McDowell," DeWitt said, moving closer. "We had great hopes for you. It was a shame to see you go off in the first wave. How is it that I've gotten here before you? You left a full 12 hours before me."
"Radioactive sandstorm, sir. Forced us to dig down and sit it out for most of the second day," Arthur said. There were a million questions swimming like caffeinated sharks in his head, but the most selfish one came out first. "You knew of my promotion?"
"Of course," DeWitt answered. "I personally thought there was no one better for it. After you were chosen in Boyd's surprise lottery for the conscription, the position still had to be filled. Went to a man by the name of Ralph Siemens. It was very unfortunate."
DeWitt clutched at the chain-link fence holding him in.
"Not that it matters now."
It did. He understood DeWitt's sentiment. There was no future for them now. But it mattered because it was a promise. It mattered because it was the only shred of hope Arthur had held on to going into this mission. If he got back, he was promoted. Period. But to hear that it was immediately awarded to Ralph, no less than 12 hours later, and given the efficiency of the IRS, likely immediately after, was like grinding salt-covered glass into an already festering wound. The two guards that had brought him here, the man with the poorly drawn snake tattoos, and Dumb Dick Rick, were now at the trough. Each stuck their head in and drank voraciously. When they had had their fill, the man in the tattoos pulled out a knife and started to sharpen it with his belt.
They clearly intended to stay for a bit, let the slaves know who was in charge. DeWitt lowered his voice. I'm sorry you got caught up in this. Boyd wanted me out of the way, always has. There wasn't anything he was unwilling to do to get to my position, but it was mine to have. His tired eyes met Arthur's once more. The revised National Emergency Operations Guide clearly states that anyone, no matter their pay grade or position, can be reassigned to carry out essential operations. The guide also states census taking as essential. The rest did not need to be said aloud. Henry S. Boyd had initiated the census to get what he wanted, and damn the consequences. The man that Arthur had looked up to, his hero, had purposefully sent an unknown amount of men to their deaths so that he could take advantage of a loophole that would allow him to move up in the agency. The bureaucrat in Arthur respected the calculus, but the man in him wept at the coldness. The two of us are finished, DeWitt said, then collapsed to a sitting position in despondent misery and physical pain. Thank you for your service. Keep quiet over there. Don't talk during our break, Dumb Dick Rick yelled. But there was no need. The commissioner had lost interest in Arthur, now confined to his fate. As for Arthur, well, his existential terror was too deep to move him to words. The last civil place on the planet, well, it just lets psychopaths climb the ladder of authority with a cold distance. The system that he grew up in, that he believed in, truly and without compromise. What difference was there between it and the terrible hierarchy here? Both Henry S. Boyd and the Colonel had killed men to get to where they are, but at least the Colonel had the decency to throttle those men with his own sausage-like fingers. Boyd had just filed a form. He lied to Arthur's face. This was supposed to be easy. There was supposed to be no one here, a tribe at most. Instead, there was a death trap, and Arthur had stepped into it willingly. Where'd you get those tats? Dumb Dick Rick asked the other guard, pointing at the striped garden hoses with poorly drawn circles for eyes. Those snakes are sick. Forced a man at gunpoint to do them, the tattooed man replied. Said it'd take him hours. I told him to do it before I was done eating my breakfast. Alpha male, Dumb Dick Rick approved without emotion, fist bumping the other. Alpha male for sure, the tattooed man agreed. Only took about 20 minutes, but I had been done with my can of beans by then, so I blew his fucking head off once he was done. Probably the best work of his life. He looked at his permanent doodles and smiled with admiration. More men came to the trough, each with a weapon holstered or slung over their shoulder. A couple of them had slabs of cooked, greasy meat in their hands. There were 11 of them total, gathered around the trough as if it were an office water cooler, and each one took a long drink before leaning against it. The group was testosterone mixed with an ignorance that almost had integrity. Arthur looked on. These men were proud, brutal, stupid, and arrogant. Was this what man had reverted to as a result of society collapsing? Or had he always been this way, only now he no longer had to hide it? DeWitt gave Arthur a sidelong look, still sitting in defeat. He recognized the look of disapproval in Arthur's face. You weren't alive before the bombs fell, DeWitt said in a hushed tone. We were always like that, only interested in covering our own insecurities with a false sense of superiority. If someone thought you were weak, then you picked on or blamed someone that was different than you. Women, different races, different sexualities. Hell, anyone and everyone that wasn't close to you. The only difference between them now and then is that then we didn't have an excuse for it. But we did it anyways. DeWitt raised a hand over his shoulder and clutched the fence. I saw that in Boyd. The only thing that gives that man pleasure is being above someone else. I kept my position for as long as I did, so he wouldn't get that satisfaction. A few of the guards had spread from the trough, but not far from it. A few of them leaned against the cages, knowing that the slave within would not dare to grab them. It was like dogs pissing to mark their territory, and now that Arthur thought about it, it wasn't a stretch to see one of them do exactly that. The guard that was head to toe in sheet metal had returned. He leaned casually on Arthur's cage. Duett stopped speaking at once, not wanting to push his luck. Arthur wanted his promotion because it meant safety, and, in all honesty, he would have been happy to stay there. Or so he thought. He had never been in charge of someone else. Would that power have gone to his head if he somehow did get home and got the promotion that he deserved? How long would it take before power had poisoned his soul? He had always run fantasies in his mind's eye of sending Ralph's smug face off to his death. Wasn't this what Boyd had done to DeWitt? Was civility a luxury to mask the rancid monkeys that they truly were? The sun had almost completely set, and a cool breeze washed over the caged people. It was the closest thing they would get to refreshment. "Anyone else hot?" Dumb Dick Rick boomed at no one in particular. "Why is it still hot out?" A shiver crept up Arthur's creaky spine. No one answered Dumb Dick Rick. As one guard leaned down to drink some water, another punched him in the groin with precision and speed. The man fell down in agony, immediately in a fetal position, clutching his assaulted balls. Laughter burst out of the other guards, the random act of cruelty on the same level as the finest stand-up comedian. Dumb Dick Rick, with a smile that revealed his rotten teeth, chest-bumped the attacker and shouted, "Alpha male, dog! Alpha male!" Then he patted him on the back in affection. The guard leaning on Arthur's cage spat out a giggle, and smoke poured out from underneath his mask. Arthur looked on at his captors in disgust, at once not surprised by his own gender, but lacking any understanding in it. If DeWitt was right, if his experience in both worlds had proved a valid theory of man, was there any escaping this? Arthur knew that there was a life of casual violence and indifference to suffering ahead of him. If terrible things were going to happen to him, why not be defiant to it? The man with the tattoos brought his arm up to show off the snakes to a different guard, but then he froze, looking bewildered.
Did my snake just move? He said, with an awe that sat neatly with fear and pleasure.
Arthur looked at the guard near him, the sheet metal armor reflecting what little light was left from the sun.
Fuck the consequences, he thought, and moved toward DeWitt. He had questions. Questions that his existential crisis demanded answers to, and tomorrow there was no guarantee he would be able to ask them.
Is there no future, sir? If we have always been like this, what can we do to break this cycle?
DeWitt shuffled, then faced Arthur, his eyes tired and gray, looking as desperate as Arthur felt.
Who knows? Maybe nothing. Maybe we wait out this era of fallout and hatred and try again. Or maybe we just hand the reins to the women and hope they don't castrate the lot of us.
Good answer, said the guard in the sheet metal armor, more smoke pouring out of the helmet. Rabia, probably only castrate the worst of you demented swine and sell the festering genitalia off as power symbols to the other women in charge. So you two will be fine, Rabia whispered. Also, she continued, shut the fuck up. We're on break.
Arthur kept quiet. There was so much he wanted to say, and if there were no barriers between them, or madmen around them, he would have rushed in for a hug and squeezed like a bear. He would then apologize for being a headstrong zealot for a cause that did not share his affection. He would look into her burnt mahogany eyes, steal a glance at her beauty, and brace himself for the ugliest string of words he had ever heard. The man holding his groin on the floor had rolled over, no longer doubled over in pain. He looked into the sky above, now dotted with a few stray stars and local planets.
It's so big, he said. It's so fucking big.
No one paid him any mind. Dumb Dick Rick and the tattooed man were too busy gawking at the poorly drawn snakes, their jaws open in disbelief.
They are moving, Dumb Dick Rick said.
The man in the tattoos screamed in terror.
Get them off! Get them off! Dumb Dick Rick grabbed the man's knife from out of his hands and hacked furiously at the tattooed arm. Panic. Sheer, bloody panic spread through the crowd of guards like a blighted thunderbolt. "I put something in the water," Rabia said to Arthur, reaching into her pocket. The sudden violence had stirred something in the guards that was not rational, and each dealt with it with flight or fight. There was laughter, tears, and raw, animalistic screaming. Rabia fished out a lockpick kit, slid a long, L-shaped piece of metal into the padlock that was holding the door shut, then pulled out a crooked piece of metal and started to rake it towards her. The guards around them paid them no attention. They were too busy either fighting each other or some invisible thing in the air that only they could see. "What in God's name did you put in there?" Arthur asked. "Everything," Rabia said, as the padlock came undone. "I put all of my drugs in there." The door swung open. "Well, except for the good feeling ones." Dumb Dick Rick was now beating the man with the tattoos with his own severed arm. "It's not working," he cried. "The snakes are everywhere." Arthur crawled out of his cage as Rabia moved on to DeWitt's. She worked quickly on his padlock. "This deserves a raise," she said, as the old man stumbled out of the cage. "A raise and a room."
"How did you?" DeWitt tried.
"Easily," Rabia answered. "I'm a goddamn professional." The two men followed Rabia, who was walking with urgency, but not running, through a path of cages. The men and women, and even a child within the cages, looked out to them in fear and desperation. Arthur met the eyes of each one he passed. "I will get you out," he thought, "no matter what happens." The terrible cacophony of drug-induced hysteria had reached a crescendo. Guards from all around had gathered to quell, or at least watch, the bedlam that had befallen their peers. Rabia shoved Arthur down behind an empty cage. DeWitt followed suit. Four guards, including the one with the rifle who had greeted them into this cruel hell, ran past them, too busy with the vicious circus ahead of them to notice the wounded bureaucrats being herded by a short metal guard. Rabia led Arthur and DeWitt inside the cage. Two more guards ran towards them, a mixture of pleasurable anticipation and fear on their faces. "Over there," Rabia pointed to the trough. "One of them wants to fuck the colonel," she yelled. The moment they were gone, she led Arthur and DeWitt out of the cage. Save for the endless rows of miserable people incarcerated in rusting boxes, the town was empty. They were soon at the far side of it, nearing a jumble of vehicles, all of them mutated into something horrible, and each capable of carrying at least one cage. "This is where they ship the slaves in and out," Rabia said. "We get in one of these junk demons while those Nazi cocksuckers are distracted and get the hell out of Dodge." She stopped suddenly and removed her helmet. Her kinky afro burst free from its constraints. Arthur's heart skipped a beat when she looked at him. Rabia's heart did the same, but for an entirely different reason. Before them was a rusted Chevrolet Impala convertible. Metal spikes were welded to the front of it, and a large cage had taken root in the back seats. This Frankenstein of car and vicious junk had lost most of its red paint, but the large manic smile of a shark had been painted on the hood of it. Rabia was immediately in love. "We take this one," she said with awe. "Oh, yes."
About the author. M.P. Fitzgerald is an author and humorist dedicated to injecting the feverish gonzo style into fiction. You can get Memos from the Wasteland, which is the official prequel to this book, free. It contains hilariously bleak office drama, Robbie's diary, and Arthur's last letter from his father. To get your copy, just head over to his website at mpfitzgerald.art. You'll also get free updates on future audiobooks and more. We hope you have enjoyed A Happy Bureaucracy by M.P. Fitzgerald, narrated by Gary Bennett. Text copyright 2019 by M.P. Fitzgerald. Production copyright 2021 by M.P. Fitzgerald.
Music by Dust Mice. Available on all streaming services and dustmice.bandcamp.com.